Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome aboard. My name is Tom Marquis, El Presidente. We do this thing called The Balance every Saturday morning. So glad that you are joining us. I am the captain of the ship, Tom Marquis. We come to you from high atop The Balance Studios in the west suburbs of Indianapolis. Got a lot to talk about. It is full throttle October, baby. We have college football action, a lot of college football to talk about, NASCAR playoffs, MLB showdowns, and week 7 NFL clashes. Hang on, because we've got a lot to get through this week. We'll start off with Adam Jividen, Browns, Buckeyes, Guardians, Superfan, Cavs fan. And, how about those Guardians? They're still hanging on, though. They're still hanging on. We'll be talking with Adam about that game here in just a few minutes. We're also going to start off talking about, can you believe it? Yes, IU football coach Saganetti has the Hoosiers rolling right now. It is homecoming. It is out down in Bloomington. The energy is high. I love it. I love it. And if you're new to the show, you know how much I love the Indiana Hoosiers. So let's go Hoosiers. We're also going to be talking about some Notre Dame football, Army football. Talk about rolling on, man. Life is good in the college football world. Next up, we'll have Steve Wilson, editor-in-chief of SpeedwayDigest.com and our official NASCAR contributor. He's been off for a few weeks. He's going to be joining us, and he's going to help us break through this week's round of 8 with NASCAR and the Xfinity Series out in Vegas. And then we'll end up it all up, wrap it up, put a bowl on it with Ed Kratz, beat writer for the Philadelphia Eagles, and SI.com, our official NFL contributor. He's going to help us break down week 7 in the NFL. 917-889-8516 is my digits. Stick around. It's about to get, well, full throttle.
That's the sound of unaged whiskey transforming into Jack Daniel's Tennessee whiskey in Lynchburg, Tennessee. Around 1860, Nearest Green taught Jack Daniel how to filter whiskey through charcoal for a smoother taste, one drop at a time. This is one of many sounds in Tennessee with a story to tell. To hear them in person, plan your trip at tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
It's double trouble, double the fun at African Safari Wildlife Park in Port Clinton, Ohio. See the largest antelope on Earth, the giant eland, and the ugliest creature on Earth, the African warthog. There's so much to see and do, including the Midwest's only drive-through safari. Feed the animals, see live educational shows, feel the excitement. Have your picture taken with a python or cockatoo. Feel the adventure. Shop the Simba Lodge gift shop with items available from around the globe. Visit the snack bar or picnic facilities. Enjoy a pony or camel ride. Or cheer your favorite porker on to victory in the famous pork chop down. Bring your family to see the rare and exotic animals at African Safari Wildlife Park in Port Clinton, Ohio. Just take Route 2 to the Route 53 North exit and follow the sign. Only 17 miles west of Cedar Point via Route 6. Open every day, rain or shine.
Morning face. You get is when you don't sleep well. This is what happened to Linda.
Morning, guys.
Good morning. Ah, what is that thing?
It's me, Linda.
Oh, my God, it talks. Run!
No, it's me, Linda, from HR.
It looks hungry. Save the children. Save them. Stay back. I've got mace.
Ow, that went in my eyes.
We're moving.
It's called beauty sleep for a reason. And there's never been a better time to get some.
Get 20% off IKEA Sultan mattresses. IKEA, love your home.
Oh, hi.
Hey.
I haven't seen on the board. Do you guys have Black Rifle coffee here?
No, I'm sorry. We only carry good small batch coffee here.
Well, it is great small batch coffee.
Well, that really can't be unless it's fresh roasted, so I don't, you know.
Well, it is fresh roasted.
I don't think you know what that means. You know what this is? This is Masa Lekwa Pique, which, of course, in the Indonesian language... Oh, let me finish. In the Indonesian language, it's weasel coffee.
You just made that up.
No, it's been passed through their digestive tract.
That's disgusting.
And then it's nature's wet processing.
Yeah, but is it good?
I mean, it's all right. Are they investor philanthropists? Do they support good causes?
Yeah, tons of causes. Veterans causes and first responder causes. But it doesn't matter because they make good coffee. So that's what I'm wanting.
Do you have any?
You know what? Actually, I'm just going to order it. They make it fresh and roasted.
Okay. Right.
Black Rifle Coffee.
It's good.
All right, and welcome back to the Ballot Planning Stop. Mark Wassell, Presidente, joining us now is Adam Jividen, Super Browns fan, Buckeyes fan, Guardians fan, Super fan, Cavs all around. This is our college football co-hosts, our all-around great guy. Adam, how are you, sir?
I'm doing good, Tom. How are you, man?
Good. I'm really good today. Nervous, but good, you know. I know you went out to L.A. Have a good trip.
It was one of those trips where, like, you're only gone for 2 days, but it felt like four because of the early start and then late leave. So, yeah, it was a good trip, but it was tiring.
I have been there, done that before. Well, and I know you were tired, but did you stay up and watch the Guardians last night?
Last night, no, I fell asleep.
I understand. So, I did
fell
watch
asleep
it.
to watch the heartbreak. So, you know. The thing is realistically, if you would have told me at the beginning of the season that this team was going to make it to the ALCS, I don't know that there is a Guardians fan on earth that wouldn't have been like, I will take that. The team is ahead of schedule. We had the number one pick in the MLB draft this year. Travis Bezzana was the pick. Second baseman. They're also cross training him as an outfielder. This team is realistically making it to the ALCS is a year early. Like, and we were just hoping to be competitive for a potential playoff spot, wild card spot, realistically, going into the season, and then have had major issues with our starting pitching and injuries, lost our ace and former Cy Young winner Shane Bieber in the second start of the season. So to get to where they are, I can't speak higher about the direction that the organization is going. It's the opposite of what's happening in Berea with our football team in Cleveland. So, you know.
Absolutely. Well, then on the other side of the fence, the Mets have decided to show up, and this is going to be an interesting showdown between the Dodgers and the Mets. You happen to have you seen the broadcast? And there's different ways you can watch it, but have you watched the DataCast?
No, I haven't watched the StatCast. I've heard it's really cool, but I have not.
For data nerds like you and I, it's really cool. Melissa was watching it with us last night, and like, it's too busy. It's just too much going on. What I love about it, I mean, it literally, you know, well, they do it in fantasy football too, for that matter. There's like the percentage chance of winning is now whatever it is
right.
throughout the game. You could see it going up and down,
and
then it's like,
yep.
yeah. And then it gives you the pitch count, it gives you the speed, it gives you it actually it's all AI, and it's like, okay, so he did a curveball. This next pitch should be boom, there it is. You know, it's apparently stuff that the MLB and the teams have been using for years, for a while.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
You know, so it's really kind of cool. So.
That would be all a part of like an in-game scouting report. Yeah,
exactly. Well, let's move on to another game that is really, really exciting. I tell you what, if Indiana had not gotten the attention of the sports world yet, they have it now, and they have it loud and clear. It is homecoming. What a bet. You know, I'm an IU alumni, so I excuse my excitement here, but you know, when was the last time the ESPN game of the week, or this week it's Fox's showdown at noon, whatever they call it, is out there at Bloomington. Pat McAfee was there, did his show yesterday there at Memorial Stadium. It's the Hoosiers. It's the Nebraska Cornhuskers. It's 6-0. For the second time in the program history since 1967. We're going to the Rose Bowl. We're winning the national championship. Ohio State proved they couldn't get it done. We're not even worried about them anymore. We're actually going to beat you guys now. They're all right. I'm off late so much. But anyway, our game, let's talk about the number 16. I'm so excited. I'm losing voice. Number 16 Indiana Hoosiers and the Nebraska Cornhuskers will meet today in a massive, big matchup at noon, and against the North. I can't speak today. Against the Northern Wildcats in their last game, the Hoosiers won 41-24. The Cornhuskers versus Rutgers Scarlet Knights won their last game 14-7. Both teams coming off of a bye week entering this matchup. What say you, sir?
I told you a few weeks ago, IU is going to be undefeated going into its game in Columbus, and I'm holding by that statement.
Now, let me ask you this. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I think IU, I love the press conference clip from your head coach, Cignetti, when he literally just says, "Look me up. All I do is win." I was like, man, that guy's got some stones on him. I love it. No, I love it. I love the attitude that he brings to the program. From an offensive perspective, the things that he's doing with the athletes at IU are remarkable. Not saying that you know they're like a high school team, but IU generally doesn't have the kind of frontline starters that can make the kind of push that they're making consistently. You know, so I've been nothing but impressed with the new head coach came from James Madison, and he's lighting the Big Ten up.
Well, and like you said, I better enjoy it while I can. I mean, but he has certainly, the head coach, Kurt Cignetti, has certainly surpassed expectations. He's already doubled the wins from a season ago where they finished 3-9. So let's talk about a few keys to this game, and we'll get into some of these other games. We can get our bets against the spreads, all of those in. Really, Nebraska really needs to control the clock, and I think that's been it's slow IU down. That's been one of their advantages. They've been able to really dominate the clock, and Dylan Raiola has to take care of the football. One of the biggest reasons they aren't ranked and undefeated is an offensive line play and turnovers against Illinois. Dylan threw a massive interception late and was pressured all game when he led by six games. Sorry, my throat is dying today. But anyway,
okay.
So what are your thoughts on Nebraska What are the keys they have to do to focus on beating a very, very, talk about momentum. It's home field advantage. It's homecoming. Like I mentioned, it's on national television. What does Nebraska have to do to beat IU today?
They got to take care of the ball and force turnovers. IU has shown that they can score on darn near every possession, pretty much all season. They are, I believe at this point, they still have the top scoring offense amongst Power 5 schools. I'd have to double check, but I think that's still the case. IU has to really just keep doing what they're doing. They have confidence in themselves. They have confidence in their program like they've never had before. And I think that's really what has to happen. Dylan Raiola, incredibly talented, has to take care of the football. He has made some really poor decisions with the ball in some of their games, especially in their losses, which is to be expected from a true freshman. So really what has to happen is if he can take care of the ball and Nebraska can force a couple turnovers, Nebraska's got a good shot. Again, I just think IU, at this point, they are not scared because they know they can put up points with just about anybody. So I think that's the key for them. And you know, that's easy to say because that's the key for every single football game. Don't turn the football over and generate turnovers. But I really think for them, not even generating turnovers, they have to take care of the ball. Because, again, when Nebraska has taken care of the ball, they have moved the ball on opponents' defenses as well. They just get themselves in trouble by turning the ball over. So I think the turnover battle is going to be a huge issue for this game. And I think IU is going to get Dylan Raiola unsettled a little bit. I think IU's crowd is going to show up like we haven't seen. There is a palpable buzz in the state for IU football that I've not ever felt before. So, you know, if they can keep this momentum going, which again I expect them to, this could be, I mean, Tom, we're looking at real good potential, because I said there are going to be potentially four teams coming out of the Big Ten in the college football playoff. And IU could very well have one of those spots. I mean, we're halfway through the season. So there's still a lot of football left. But
yes,
IU's in a really good spot here, especially to be this deep undefeated. I would wager to say that if IU wins this week, who do they have next week, Tom?
You know what? I don't look past this week. I'm just focused on Nebraska right now.
I was going to say, if they can win each of these next 2 weeks, they will be in the top 10 in the initial playoff poll. Not even a question. The only reason they're not higher ranked than 16 is because it's IU. If you put like a blind test and put their resume next to, say, LSU's resume, and IU had the LSU name, IU would be in the top five.
Oh, absolutely. Well, to answer your question, it's Washington next week, and it's another home game, so they don't have to fly across the nation. And then the game after that is at Michigan State. So two relatively winnable games.
Oregon, when we're talking initial playoffs, again, if IU can keep this going, they will be a top 7 or 8 at least.
Well, we'll see what happens. Certainly, IU's got to be focused on running the ball. It's key for the offense. I know Curtis Roque is probably one of the top quarterbacks in the nation, but running the ball will make it easier for him to go deep in the game. Nebraska hasn't allowed a single rushing touchdown all season. Here's some interesting defense stats. IU ranks 14th in points allowed per game, 14.8, 7th in total yards, 355.7, 25th in passing yards, 171.8, 8th in rushing yards allowed, 83.8, and tied for 7th in sacks, 19, and tied for 12th in tackles for loss, 41. So the stars have to come out and shine, and the stars have to shine on us as Hoosiers, and we will see what happens. Let's rewind a little bit back. Last week, Oregon beat you by 1 point, and a lot of people like to say, hey, you know, somebody took advantage of a loophole and a rule. Maybe so, maybe not. But they were able to win the game. At the end of the day, Oregon got the W, and Ohio State did not. 1 point game, disappointing loss for Ohio State fans. But I know you're the guy that can give us the reasons that it happened. So we certainly wanted to make sure we hit the rewind button real quickly with Oregon and Ohio State. What say you, sir?
Yeah, I mean, to lose in Austin Stadium at night by one, with a whole lot of scenarios. A, you had the 12-man on the field penalty, I believe 5 seconds off the clock. You had Will Howard, who is yelling timeout as he goes into his slide, which some referees will say you have to be completed before they will acknowledge it. Some referees say if you start the slide, you're declaring yourself dead. You also had Quinshon Judkins had his first fumble since 2002. We also lost our left tackle to a bad injury. We had the weird onside kick where the kicker hit the ball like 100 miles an hour squarely at our up man, which if that goes basically – if that ball bounces any other direction except straight back, which we, you know, football bounces are unpredictable, Ohio State's starting on the 40. And even then, we only lost by one. We got one of the worst games in recent memory from Denzel Burke. I'll just say this, Tom, if Ohio State and Oregon match up again in Indianapolis for the Big Ten Championship game, I'm still not worried. That was our B-plus game. They played their A game at home, at night, and still only won by one. And, again, then you also throw in the Jeremiah Smith offensive pass interference, which people will be like, well, he had his arm extended. Sure, but it was like at the 5.5-yard mark, which, I mean, you would call that if it's 30 yards downfield, not if it's a half yard past the engagement point where all contact has to be within 5 yards for both offense and defense. There's a whole lot that had to happen for Oregon to win that game. Am I worried? Not really. Like, I've also watched Texas hasn't looked unbeatable. Georgia's obviously lost to Alabama and has struggled with other teams. Alabama beat Georgia, but then lost to Vanderbilt, almost lost last week to South Carolina. So there's not a juggernaut in college football this year. A lot's going to depend on matchups. A lot's going to depend on just sometimes the way the ball bounces. It was one of those where I was like disappointed, but I was like, okay. Like, you know, especially now with the 12-team playoff, a single loss doesn't eliminate you, which I think was kind of what fans have been calling for years. Obviously you can't have a tie, but a 1 point loss on the road at night should never disqualify someone. But under the old system, that very well could have happened.
So real quickly, and then we're going to get into these bets against the spread, Oregon just demolished, shut out Purdue last night. And it's not really that Purdue got lost by Oregon, because that really probably was expected coming into this game. It's just the overall train wreck dumpster fire that Purdue football is right now. And, you know, I do feel good. I'm in a situation like where IU is having a good year and Purdue is not. So that IU-Purdue rivalry, I'm enjoying this right now. But it is embarrassing for Purdue fans. And Ryan Walters, I know he's under contract in 2027 with, $12.45 million remaining on his, remaining after this season. That's not a lot of what I call gobble-up money. Does he stay around?
I don't know. I mean, I feel like Purdue never has, like, a quick hook with anybody. If I'm Purdue, the person that I'm going to try to get up on the phone to see if they would be interested is Clark Lee at Vanderbilt. He pulled the amazing upset over Alabama just a few weeks ago. But I don't I feel like Purdue is going backwards. You know, I say unfortunately for Purdue fans, not for IU fans. IU fans are loving it. But I mean, I feel like if you remember where we were at this point a year ago when we were talking about Tom Allen, where I'm like, man, every year for the last several years, I feel like IU football is going backwards. I feel like that's what's happening up in West Lafayette as well. So would it shock me if they retained him? No, because they don't let coaches go quickly. Would it surprise me, though, if they decided to move on? Not in the slightest.
Well, we're up against the clock here, so hopefully you can stick around for just a few more minutes here because I want to get into the bets so you get to spread. Are you able to do that?
Yeah, I can go for a few.
Hey, real quickly here, I've got to get back on my IU train. I was just looking at this tweet from Trent McGee. This game day in Bloomington feels like graduation weekend, a little 500 weekend, and a baby – had a baby and called it homecoming. Bloomington is bumping. obviously, down there tailgating, and you know, to be quite honest, it doesn't get a lot of media attention. It's just a ho-hum, you know, tailgate, but it is today. It's been on the sports channels. It's been on the local channels, so I love it. So let's start with them. The spread is 6.5. What say you, sir?
IU covers. I told you, man.
IU covers.
I'm on the Hoosier train for this year. I'm on the ride with you, buddy. I think IU covers.
I appreciate it. All right, let's get into the Virginia Cavaliers and the Clemson Tigers. Clemson Tigers, number 10. They're 5-1, and Virginia is 4-2. The spread is 21.5. What say you, sir?
Virginia's terrible. I'm gonna say Clemson.
Okay, fair enough.
Seem to be getting better as the season has gone on. So yes, I mean it's not just a Virginia thing. But Clemson has gotten better as the season has progressed.
Eastern Carolina Pirates 3-3, and they're on the road with my Army Knights up in West Point. Number 23 ranked Army Knights. We talked about them last week. They're on a roll. They're 6-0 as well. And the spread is 17.5.
We're going to go the same deal. We're rolling Army. We're rolling IU. I'm all in on these small schools that are just dominating people early in the season. So
I know
Army isn't exactly like the same as a small school. I'm saying like what we would consider a smaller program.
Yeah.
We're taking Army to cover.
I'm looking forward to that Army Navy game this year, as always. Notre Dame is on the road against Georgia Tech. The spread is 8.5. Notre Dame is coming in ranked number 12.
This one's interesting. I think a lot of people had Notre Dame left for dead after their Northern Illinois loss, and then when you've had some of these other upsets that have happened. That we've, you know, mentioned earlier or on previous shows. Now all of a sudden Notre Dame's right back in the playoff conversation. So I was talking to my dad actually, and I think there's a really good likelihood that heading into the playoff, there's nobody undefeated. I'd look at Texas. I don't think they're going to go undefeated. And then again, I think assuming we can really, our big one is making it past Penn State in the whiteout game. which after watching Penn State play USC, doesn't really worry me a whole lot. They still have James Franklin on the sidelines. But, you know, I think Ohio State's going to match up against Oregon in the Big Ten championship game, and I think they will get the win in that scenario. And I think because of that, I think Texas is going to lose somewhere, but I don't know that there is going to be an undefeated team heading into this inaugural playoff. And so I think because of that, that fact is Notre Dame's back in it. Now, in terms of the spread today, you said the spread was how much again, Tom?
8.5.
Notre Dame seems to have figured things out on offense. We said we weren't sure. We thought Stanford would play him a little closer. That didn't happen.
No,
I'm actually
going
to take Notre Dame to cover.
Okay. All right. We move on to the Charlotte 49ers. They are, speaking of Navy, they are against the Midshipmen, who's ranked at number 25 in the top 25 ranks. They are 5-0. So the spread is 17.5 against the Charlotte 49ers. They're 3-3.
All right. You probably know where I'm going with this. I told you, man, I'm all in on IU. I've been all in on Army, and I'm all in on Navy. We're rolling with Navy, man. We're going with IU and the military academies to cover the spread, which I don't know that I've ever said in my entire life.
Well, hey, let's keep the ball rolling. James Madison Deuce, as we just talked about, that's Cincinnati's former team. They've no pun intended. They picked up the ball and kept running. They're 5-1. They are on the road against the Georgia Southern Eagles, who are 4-2. The spread is 10.5 here.
Ooh, I feel like James Madison has very much, as you had said, has kind of just continued the momentum that Cignetti brought the program. What was the spread on that, Tom? What was that number?
Yeah, 10.5.
10.5. I feel like I've been saying over on all of them. I'm going to take the under on this one. I'm going to say James Madison maybe still wins, and maybe still wins like in a squeaker.
But they don't cover. No cover.
Correct.
All right. Ball State Cardinals. That's my mom went to Ball State. We know a lot of Ball State grads around here in Indianapolis. Ball State is taking on Vandy. And Vandy's 4-2. And despite beating Alabama, they're still not ranked. I don't know. But
the rankings right now are still done by the AP poll guys, and those guys don't actually watch football, I don't think. Like, it's kind of embarrassing when they put the polls out. It's just stupid.
So who covers in this game? Who wins
what's the spread?
26.5.
Ooh, I'll take Vandy. I think Vandy's rolling. Vandy's got momentum. They've got energy following the upset of Alabama, and I think they cover.
I wish I'd been keeping track of our record of what we've been able to do against, because
we have had a couple bad weeks, but generally I think we're pretty good.
Well, for what it's worth, the group that we're in this is my work group, and so we're in second place. So there you go.
So that has to indicate that we're doing pretty good. Yeah.
We're doing pretty good. All right, let's talk about Georgia Bulldogs and Texas Longhorns. Number 5, Georgia, 5-1, and Texas 6-0. The spread is 3.5. This is a stay-away-from game, but here we are. What are your thoughts
100%.
On this game?
100%. This is a stay-away-from game in terms of betting. Now, I said earlier, I don't think anybody's going to be undefeated, which would imply Texas, who is undefeated, is going to pick up a loss.
You think it'll be today?
I don't know if it's today, though. I think Texas loses a game that they don't – like an Alabama-Vanderbilt. Here's why, and I said this in the Alabama-Georgia game. I don't know that Georgia has the playmakers to stay in front like they have in the past. Carson Beck, very solid quarterback, still undecided as to how his NFL prospects will turn out. But very, I mean, he's very, very solid. Not saying that he's not going to be a good quarterback in the NFL. I don't know that he's a sure, like he was, I would say he was more surefire for me than some of the quarterbacks that went in the first round last year, for example, such as J.J. McCarthy. I would wildly take Carson Beck over J.J. McCarthy. I'd take J.J. McCarthy, or I'd take Carson Beck wildly over Bo Nix. Is Carson Beck better than Quinn Ewers at this point? I don't know. I would say, I think so. I would say more than likely, like on my board, I have Carson Beck as the number two quarterback. And then I have Quinn Ewers as right now as the number three heading into the NFL. That's still somewhat based on potential because Ewers looked good early in the season, then got hurt, and then had kind of a little bit of an up and down start last week. The question that I'm going to have is Quinn Ewers struggles, is he going to have a quick hook for Arch Manning? And that we don't know. So I don't know that Georgia has the offensive firepower to win this game. I think Texas is going to be dialed in. They looked real good against Oklahoma last week. I've actually got Texas winning and covering. Again, I think they'll lose a game where they're looking ahead later in the season, a la what happened with Alabama and Vanderbilt. But I don't think it's this week. I think Georgia goes to the precipice of maybe even making the playoff with a second loss early in the season. So I have Texas winning this game. I have them covering because I have them winning by four. Well, the way I think it plays out is I think Georgia's up by three and Quinn Ewers engineers a late touchdown to go up by four. So they cover, but barely.
All right, let's talk about UCF and Iowa State. The 13.5 is the spread. Iowa State's coming in ranked number 9, and the spread is 13.5. UCF Knights on the road against the Iowa State Cyclones.
We're going to take the Fighting Matt Campbells and the Cyclones to cover. Iowa State just win, man. Dan Campbell's the head coach of the Lions. What's his name? I don't know. I'm spacing. I'm still tired. I'm still recovering from that.
I get it. No problem. So you talk about your small school rule. This one should be a hard pick for you then because you got North Texas Mean Green against the Memphis Tigers. The spread is 9.5. The Memphis Tigers is at home against the North Texas Mean Green.
Oh, those are both small schools, though. So, yeah.
So this would be a hard one for you.
I'm going to say.
And they're both 5-1, too.
I know. They're both having a solid year. This one's tough. And what's the spread?
9.5.
9.5. Ooh. I'm assuming for Memphis, yes?
They get 3 points to the home team anyway. So.
Right. Yeah, I know. I think I'm going to take Memphis to win, but not cover.
Not cover. So, North Texas Mean Green. What is a Mean Green? When you look at their mascot, it looks like a green type of eagle, but
it's like a green eagle. Yeah.
Is it a real thing? I mean, like tigers are a real thing. Stallions,
I don't know. It's kind of like the Western Kentucky like red guy, the red blob guy.
The red blob.
It just looks
guy.
Like a big smoosh with a smiley face on him.
All right.
The
well,
Hilltoppers.
Hilltoppers. That's right. That's not West Virginia. West Virginia is the Mountaineers.
No. I said Western Kentucky.
Oh, Western Kentucky. Okay, you're right. The Hilltoppers. Yeah. All right. Let's last game. Went bet against the spread. You got the number 21 SMU Mustangs against Stanford Cardinals. Are only 2-4. One of those wins was against Notre Dame, I believe. SMU is on the road to Stanford. The spread is 15.5.
I told you on our initial preview, SMU is a small school that's going to start making moves. I didn't say they would make the playoffs, but I said that they were going to finish the year ranked, and I'm going to continue that trend. SMU wins and covers. Also, Stanford is real bad.
Your small school's rule. What do you think is going to be the total points between Georgia and Texas?
Let's go – I said Texas wins by four. Let's go 38-31. So that would be 69?
Yeah, 69. Making my brain go. Real quickly, let's talk about the World Series. Who do you think gets there? Is it the Dodgers? Is it the Mets?
It's gonna be Dodgers Yankees. Like,
turn on your data cast here for us.
It's gonna be Dodgers Yankees. The Guardians. I think this is kind of we've hit our high water mark. You just got, like, I was thinking through last night, the volume of first and second year players on this Guardians roster, and it's substantial. And so I just that are playing meaningful innings. And I just think, you know, when you just go the 1 through 4 at the top of the Yankees lineup with Gleyber Torres, Juan Soto, Aaron Judge, Giancarlo Stanton, they literally have Gleyber Torres, who's one of the best shortstops in the game, followed by three guys that have either won or finished in the top three in the MVP award multiple seasons. That's hard to contend with, and that's the challenge that the Guardians have been facing. I mean, if you look at the runs that the Yankees have scored, that's where all of them are. It's all off the bats of Soto, Judge, and Stanton, just about. Like, there have been a sprinkling in from the other guys, that almost all their RBIs have been generated by those three guys. It's just tough. It's just tough. If you're a lineup. So I think that you're going to have Dodgers Yankees, which is probably Major League Baseball's wet dream right now. After we had the Rangers Diamondbacks, they were hoping for a big time, you know, big city matchup. So they're getting probably what they were hoping for. And realistically, when you're talking the championship series, those have been, though, two of the best teams all season. Probably the best four or five teams through the bulk of the year were Dodgers, Yankees, Guardians, and Phillies. Obviously, the Phillies went home early at the hands of the Mets. But you're also talking two of the three largest payrolls in all of Major League Baseball. And realistically, the payroll issue is going to continue to get worse in Major League Baseball until they do something with the salary cap, and there's still just no indication from the owners that they have any desire to do that. The parity that baseball needs to bring fans back is something that they seem incapable of wanting to do. So, you know, we'll see.
The one game I totally forgot. I got so excited about IU and everything. I totally forgot about that one more game. I apologize. We have got to talk about Alabama, number 7, and number 11, Tennessee Vols. The Tennessee Vols fell down a little bit. Hey, but we're coming. This is a big rivalry.
We thought this was going to be a big one early, and both teams stumbled literally in the same week within an hour of each other. So, this one's interesting. I said Alabama's offense is really, it's Jalen Milroe making things happen, and it's Ryan Williams. Tennessee's offense is a lot more diverse. This game is in Knoxville, is it not, Tom?
Oh, yes. Good old Rocky Top.
I've got Tennessee coming out on top. And here's the interesting thing, and this is kind of what I was talking about, is we could have, you now have, if Alabama loses, both Alabama, and if Georgia loses as well, Alabama and Georgia both with two losses, which would likely knock them out of the SEC championship unless it's utter chaos in the next several weeks. And I think it would guarantee that one of the two is probably not making the playoffs. If you just look at the numbers and the math, they would have to have everybody else pick up two losses for that to happen. So I have Tennessee getting the dub over Alabama. I think I think Alabama's defense, from everything I've seen, I'm not impressed with them. They struggle looking for the ball in the air. And I think this is the game that Tennessee uses to put themselves back in a driver's seat to play for the SEC championship, with Alabama having two losses. Again, if the Georgia-Texas game plays out the way that I anticipate it, Texas winning, that would put Georgia down there with two losses as well. So I've got Tennessee winning this game, and us being in a really interesting position of both Georgia and Alabama having to claw their way back up to get in the national title talks, which, I mean, I can't think of the last time that both of them were in that position. It's been a while.
Well, the spread is 3. Who wins against the spread?
Tennessee. Tennessee wins and covers. I think Tennessee wins big. Big-ish. I'll say Tennessee wins by 10.
Tennessee wins. Vols cover as well?
Yeah.
The spread? The spread. The spread.
I mean, if they win by 10, that means they cover. Spread's,
I don't know. I just want to make sure I cover my dots. My producer's asking me, hey, is the Vols cover? I'm like, I think we just talked about that, so I had to make sure I talked about it. you know my producer well, so she's
a good guy.
All right, buddy, I appreciate you. You know what? I'm going to ask you again. I have to ask you. You told me, I'm going to call you to the mat. You told me you were going to start putting some stuff up on Jimmy Den, but I do know your very busy schedule. So, you know, all of it is forgiven. Let me know when you have some masterpieces and we'll get it put out there for you, sir.
That sounds good, Tom. I'll talk to you later, buddy.
All right, buddy. Have a good weekend. We'll see you.
All right, you too. Bye-bye.
Adam Jividen, super Browns fan, our college football. Man, if you don't get excited on a Saturday morning talking to Adam, man, you just got to check your pulse, because he will wake you up and get you go. And that's him naturally. He just does that naturally. He doesn't even need coffee, that's for sure. It's IU, it's Nebraska. Hey, we're all excited here, and we're ready to go at noon here. We'll see what happens. A full action of college football on slate. Make sure you follow our social media at TBallance. I'll be back for just a few moments. And then we'll get into the NASCAR talk right here on the Balance Radio Network.
Under the knife, I surrender. The innocence yours to consume. You cut it away. And you fill me up with hate. Into the silence you sent me.
That's the sound of unaged whiskey transforming into Jack Daniel's Tennessee Whiskey in Lynchburg, Tennessee. Around 1860, Nearest Green taught Jack Daniel how to filter whiskey through charcoal for a smoother taste, one drop at a time. This is one of many sounds in Tennessee with a story to tell. To hear them in person, plan your trip at tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
When you don't go to Geico.com, car insurance can be confusing. Like Swedish techno confusing.
Bark, bark, meow, meow. Dance with me, purple cow. Bark, bark, meow, meow. Ooh, you lovely cow.
Geico makes it easy. With 24/7 access, all you have to do is go to Geico.com and you could save money on car insurance. It just makes sense. Unlike, you know.
Dance with me, purple cow. I like your move.
When you don't go to Geico.com, car insurance can be hard. Like early 90s heavy metal hard.
I'm yelling and screaming and I'm loud. Roar!
Geico makes it easy. You can review and update your policy or report a claim on Geico.com or the Geico mobile app. Because shouldn't we all have a little less stress in our lives?
I'm not even upset about anything!
It's double trouble, double the fun at African Safari Wildlife Park in Port Clinton, Ohio. See the largest antelope on Earth, the giant eland, and the ugliest creature on Earth, the African warthog. There's so much to see and do, including the Midwest's only drive-through safari. Feed the animals. See live educational shows. Feel the excitement. Have your picture taken with a python or cockatoo. Feel the adventure. Shop the Simba Lodge gift shop with items available from around the globe. Visit the snack bar or picnic facilities. Enjoy a pony or camel ride. Or cheer your favorite porker on to victory in the famous pork chop down. Bring your family to see the rare and exotic animals at African Safari Wildlife Park in Port Clinton, Ohio. Just take Route 2 to the Route 53 North exit and follow the sign. Only 17 miles west of Cedar Point via Route 6. Open every day, rain or shine.
Morning face. You get it when you don't sleep well. This is what happened to Linda.
Morning, guys.
Good morning. Ah, what is that thing?
It's me, Linda.
Oh, my God, it talks! Run!
No, it's me, Linda, from HR.
It looks hungry! Save the children! Save them! Stay back! I've got mace!
Ow! They're one of my eyes!
We're moving!
It's called beauty sleep for a reason. And there's never been a better time to get some.
Get 20% off IKEA Sultan mattresses. IKEA, love your home.
Oh, hi.
Hey.
Seen on the board, do you guys have Black Rifle coffee here?
No, I'm sorry. We only carry good small batch coffee here.
Well, it is great small batch coffee.
Well, that really can't be unless it's fresh roasted, so,
Well, it is fresh roasted.
I don't think you know what that means. You know what this is? This is Masa Lekwa Pike, which, of course, in the Indonesian language... Oh, let me finish. In the Indonesian language, it's weasel coffee.
You just made that up.
No, it's been passed through their digestive tract.
That's disgusting.
And then it's nature's wet processing.
Yeah, but is it good?
I mean, it's all right. Are they investor philanthropists? Do they support good causes?
Yeah, tons of causes. Veterans causes and first responder causes, but it doesn't matter because they make good coffee. So that's what I'm wondering.
Do you have any?
You know what? Actually, I'm just going to order it. They make it fresh and roasted.
Okay. Right.
Black Rifle Coffee.
It's good.
Cooking. Daddy's home, boys. They shall serve no fries before their time.
This one's on you, dude. Oh. Who's got the buku?
Yeah. Rihanna. Good girl going bad. Take three. Action. No clouds in my stones. Let it rain, I hide your plane in the bank. Coming down like the Dow Jones. When the clouds come, we gone. We Rockefellers, we fly higher than weather. And deep clouds are better, you know me. In anticipation for precipitation. Stack chips with a rainy day. Jay, Rain Man is back with Little Miss Sun.
All right, and welcome back to The Balance. We are trucking right along here. Thank you, Adam, Jim, and Ann. Super Browns fan, Buckeyes fan, Guardians fan, Cavs fan, and our college football co-host and all-around Swiss Army knife for the show. Thank you, Adam, for coming on. And we got a few more games to get through on Bet Against the Spread. And then we're going to be talking with Steve Wilson. He's back. He's been off for a few weeks, but he's back, editor-in-chief of SpeedwayDigest.com, our official NASCAR contributor. We're going to get back in this conversation about NASCAR. And the championship is just coming right up on us. And he's going to take us through this week's round of eight with NASCAR and the Xfinity Series out in Las Vegas. So going to be a fun time to talk some NASCAR with Steve again. And we still got Ed Kratz, beat writer for the Philadelphia Eagles and SI.com, joining us today. Our official NFL contributor helping us break down what's going on in week 7 of the NFL. So stick around. It's only going to get better from where it is now. If you're listening to us on the podcast, which a lot of you do, it's our live show. So really, if you're listening to the podcast, hit that little button that says like, subscribe, what have you. That way, we know how awesome you are. We already know how awesome we are. But the other great thing about it is when this show ends today, we'll just a few minutes after that, we'll have the podcast drop. And you'll get a notification. You can drop everything you're doing, and boom, I got to go listen to the balance. Everything else now comes to a complete stop. You'll get that notification so you'll know to stop doing what you're doing. If only that were true, right? If only that were true, puppy dogs and butterflies. But seriously, it'll be there for you when you are ready to listen to it in your listening pleasure. And follow us on the X, formerly known as the artist, formerly known as Twitter, and at T-Balanced. And also, you can find us on the gram. That's right, on the IG, people, at the Balanced Sportscast, and our website, balancedsportscast.com. And, of course, you can find us over on the Book of Faces. So, see, really, you can find us anywhere. And so if you have already found us, thank you. We are your new best friend. If you want to make sure that we are part of your inner circle of trust, let all of your BBFs and even your enemies, who cares? We don't care. We love everybody on this show. Let them know, hey, there's this awesome podcast you got to listen to. And that guy, Tom, man, he is just the best. He's the best. Let's talk about a couple more games that I had on the list here. Got overly excited about IU and Nebraska. We got off the rails, which, you know, is easy to do on this show. It happens quite frequently. But let's just go real quickly here. A couple games here. You got number 24, Michigan, and number 22, Illinois. Illinois gave the Bearcats crew a CLLD trophy to throw in the dumpster last week, as they beat the line in 6 points. So pick Illinois 3.5 and lose by fewer than 3.5 or win outright. So there's your choices on Illinois. Talked about Hawaii. I think that was last week's game, actually. No, maybe not. I'm losing my brain. It's easy to do. I'm getting older. This week is the week of my birthday. So that was last week. So I wouldn't bet on that game today. All right, I've got the right list up. We'll make it happen here. All right, we hit Indiana, Illinois. I mean, we hit Indiana, Nebraska. you know, actually, I'm gonna scratch the betting for right now because I'm looking at the time here. We don't have time to get through these games. So hey. What we'll do is we'll get it put up on social media, and we will go from there. We've got some NFL action coming up, too, that we're going to be talking about. My name's Tom Marquis, El Presidente. Man, time just gets away. I thought I had more time than that. Somebody bail me out of here. We'll be right back right here on the Balanced Radio Network.
Opportunity seize everything you ever wanted. One moment that you capture, just let it slip. Yo,
his palms are sweaty, knees weak, arms are heavy. There's vomit on his sweater already. Mom's spaghetti, he's nervous, but on the surface he looks calm and ready to drop bombs. But he keeps on forgetting what he wrote down. The whole crowd goes so loud. He opens his mouth, but the words won't come out. He's choking. How? Everybody's choking now.
That's the sound of unaged whiskey,
transforming into Jack Daniel's Tennessee Whiskey in Lynchburg, Tennessee. Around 1860, Nearest Green taught Jack Daniel how to filter whiskey through charcoal for a smoother taste, one drop at a time. This is one of many sounds in Tennessee with a story to tell. To hear them in person, plan your trip at tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
Okay, okay. I can't believe it.
I've been playing 4-on-4 with a barbershop quartet.
Pass the ball, pass the rock. We're open, just pass the ball.
Nah, I can't believe how easy it was to save hundreds of dollars on my car insurance with Geico.
Yeah.
Believe it, Geico could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Oh, hi. Hey. Seen on the board, do you guys have Black Rifle coffee here?
No, I'm sorry. We only carry good small batch coffee here.
Well, it is great small batch coffee.
Well, that really can't be unless it's fresh roasted, so I don't, you know.
Well, it is fresh roasted.
I don't think you know what that means. You know what this is? This is Masa Lekwa Pike, which, of course, in the Indonesian language... Oh, let me finish. In the Indonesian language, it's weasel coffee.
You just made that up.
No, it's been passed through their digestive tract.
That's disgusting.
And then it's nature's wet processing.
Yeah, but is it good?
I mean, it's all right. Are they investor philanthropists? Do they support good causes?
Yeah, tons of causes. Veterans causes and first responder causes. But it doesn't matter because they make good coffee. So that's what I'm wondering.
Do you have any?
You know what? Actually, I'm just going to order it. They make it fresh and roasted. Okay. Right.
Black Rifle Coffee.
It's good.
Give me fuel, give me fire, give me that which I desire.
All right, and welcome back to The Balance. We're back on track, if you will. No pun intended. Thank you, Adam Chibidin, for jumping on and helping us break down the college football games against the spread. IU, Nebraska is IU homecoming. It's one of the best teams we've had since 1967, so I'm loving it. But joining us now is Mr. Steve Wilson, editor-in-chief of Speedway Digest, our official NASCAR contributor. Welcome back, sir. How you feeling?
Well, I'm doing better now, so hopefully, we can get past some of this stuff.
I'm glad to hear that you're feeling better because it couldn't come at a better time because we're getting ready to get into some NASCAR talk and conversation. I wanted to just kind of get it from you, and then we'll get into the what is this about the NASCAR antitrust lawsuit and injunction motion filed. I'm not the NASCAR lawyer, so I figure I'll leave it to you to tell us what this lawsuit's about, where it came from, where it's going, and what's the story behind it.
Well, I'm not a lawyer either, but, you know, I did stay at a Holiday Inn Express one time. So, you know.
There you go. That makes you weird.
let's start from the easiest way to start from the beginning is – that NASCAR entered in with the teams to go into a charter type situation, and that at the expiration of the current charter agreement is coming up at the end of this year. So, you know, NASCAR went out and began the process of not only working with TV partners and their other partners to work on their long-term deals, but at the same time they wanted to couple the charter agreements into each agreement or partner agreement as far as their TV rights. So, you know, they started working with the teams, and they got the vast majority of the teams to agree on various different terms. And, you know, 23XI, owned by Denny Hamlin, has kind of been somebody that has been the leader of these negotiations in some degree or form or what have you over the last year or so. Well, it got down to a point that NASCAR and the teams and the RTA, which is kind of their oversight, pseudo, I guess the best way to explain them would be, you know, would be a union to most people, which is the RTA, and they look over these charters for them and negotiate these charters for the various teams, and you know, it's kind of that part of it from that side. Well, down to a point where NASCAR had gotten to where they needed to get an agreement with the teams and started sending out final contracts. And sometime in August, you know, it was kind of the finalization of this, and the vast majority of the teams went ahead and signed on to it. So a couple of weeks after this, Denny Hamlin, going into Talladega, had continued to make comments, and even as far as back as Darlington, 23XI was saying that, you know, they still weren't signed on and they still weren't making agreements to or agreeing to what NASCAR was proposing. So a couple of weeks ago, heading into Talladega, 23XI and Front Row Motorsports, two teams that had not signed on to agreements, filed an antitrust lawsuit, stating more or less that NASCAR and the family, the France family that owns the series, were engaging in a lot monopolistic ways because of the way that they control the series and control the racetrack. Mm-hmm. They're also making claims to the fact that the teams do not own their own intellectual properties. And NASCAR also owns the cars and the technology behind the cars in which they race in. And they felt like between all these things coupled together that they were, you know, not getting a fair deal, especially in the expanded rights and the expanded money that was due to become, that they, 23XI and Front Row Motorsports, both felt like they were owed a larger portion of this. So that's kind of the crux of this lawsuit here, is where you know, you have two teams out there that represent four charters, feeling like that they were not getting as much of the pie, you know, that pie that they were looking for. Now, you know, my personal, now if I go back and I kind of give my personal thoughts onto this, I know a lot of people may not remember this, but several years ago, before 23XI and Denny Hamlin built the new garage that they built there in Charlotte and expanded their race teams, you know, from just one to two, and now they're looking at a potential to three, Denny made some comments several years back, you know, long before these negotiations even came up, where he said that he was not going to expand into this sport until NASCAR gave him more money. Well, you know, my personal thoughts into this is that, you know, you're not really owed anything in this sport. And it's not incumbent upon NASCAR to pay your bills to build new garages and build new teams and hire new drivers and hire new employees. You know, that's part of anything that you do. You know, I just kind of feel like, you know, there's kind of, you know, one side of this is that 23XI and Denny Hamlin feel like that NASCAR should be footing more of their bills. And on the other side of this, NASCAR is saying, well, nobody is telling you to build garages and start new teams and hire new employees. So, mm-hmm. You know, I think there's a lot of things all going on at one time into this. And, you know, if you go back, and my final thought to this is, if you go back and you look at history has not been kind to these situations in NASCAR. In one particular situation, well, the two situations in which predominantly have not been good for this, in the 90s, Francis Furco was a shareholder in Speedway Motorsports, which was in Texas Motor Speedway when they were a public company. And they had one race out there at Texas Motor Speedway, and Francis Furco, being a shareholder, believed that Texas Motor Speedway was owed a second date, and he felt like, you know, as a shareholder, that he, that, you know, NASCAR was keeping too many race dates to themselves. So he filed a similar type of monopolistic lawsuit against NASCAR, stating some of the things that, that Denny and 23XI are also claiming, between the monopolistic means that, you know, the France family owns. Well, long story short to all of this is that NASCAR ended up settling with them. And as part of the settlement is that Rockingham Speedway in North Carolina was eventually sold to Speedway Motorsports, and the race date that was at Rockingham at the time was then transferred over into Texas Motor Speedway. So anybody who knows the story of Rockingham Speedway, over the next 25-plus years, the track has kind of languished between ownership and bankruptcies and this and that and other, and has never really found its footing in the sport. The other particular situation was when Kentucky Speedway was built. Similar type deal. Kentucky Speedway was built by a group of independent owners at the time, and they had had conversations with NASCAR about what they felt was, you know, the path forward for the Speedway. At the beginning, they were offered things like Xfinity Series races and some of the other things out there, but they felt that, you know, they were owed, quote-unquote, owed a Cup Series date at Kentucky Speedway. So in at the, you know, the ownership, the independent ownership at that time at Kentucky Speedway decided that they were once again going to file a monopolistic lawsuit against NASCAR, stating almost the exact same things that Francis Furco had said, and once again the same things that Denny Hamlin are saying. As everybody knows, the Speedway was eventually sold as part of a lawsuit. Speedway Motorsport, once again, you know, they seem to be the ones that somehow get involved into this, even though that they don't want to be. Speedway Motorsports ended up acquiring Kentucky Speedway, and goes out there, runs some races out there, moves a mm-hmm. state there for a couple of years, and now the Speedway is closed. So the moral to all this story is that right. History has not really been kind to these things. We have a Speedway that's closed and another one that's languished off and on for 20, 25 years. So, you know, at the end of the day, you know, if parts of NASCAR have to be sold off or they have to be divested in some way or some means, history has just really never has never been good or kind to that, because at this point, we don't have anybody building Speedways. We don't have anybody buying Speedways. I doubt that Roger Penske would want to be involved into this, because in all technicality, if you think of the way that IndyCar is run, IndyCar is owned by one individual and one corporation, no different than the way that NASCAR is. And IndyCar just went with a charter-type situation where they got every single team to sign on to it. So, you know, I think there's a lot of things going on out there, and I think there's a lot of things to be played out, but I'm not just sure how much, you know, Denny and 23XI are really going to be able to get out of NASCAR, to be honest with you.
Well, we're definitely going to be following it for sure. I know it's a very complex story, and I appreciate you sharing all that information for us. Also, we found out this week Haley Deegan certainly made her name in the Truck Series and has been racing in the NASCAR, has decided to make a move over to open wheel racing this week. Haley Deegan will make the move from stock cars to open wheel racing in 2025, as she will compete in a full-time 14 race season at the Indy XT Development Series in IndyCar. And those that may not know, it's very, very similar to the Xfinity Series in NASCAR. 23-year-old Deegan, the daughter of action sports star Brian Deegan, completed three seasons in NASCAR's Truck Series and drove the first half of the 2024 in the Xfinity Series after having success as a rookie in ARCA. So she's had success in racing. What made her decide, or maybe you don't know the answer to this, but was it just money? Was it sponsorships? Was it better opportunities? That's probably all of the above. Haley Deegan moves over to open wheel racing, and maybe in a couple of years we'll see her racing in the Indy 500. What are your thoughts about that move?
Yeah, you know, earlier this season, Haley had walked away, or, you know, separated herself from AM Racing, which had been part of the group that Ford and her and others had put together as a deal for her to run in the Xfinity Series. She had a lot of rough starts into this. The car didn't run well, you know, didn't have the position, the finishing positions that they were looking for. So she felt like it was time to get out of the car and plot a new course out there. There was some talk about, you know, some of the other teams that were interested in her in NASCAR, but nothing it looked like seemed to come to fruition. So she's now switched over to the Indy NXT Series. She was just out there the other day, and I know it's probably the first time she's probably been in these cars, so she was one of the slowest cars out there during testing just a couple of days ago. But, you know, it'll be exciting to see how she does out there. And following in the footsteps of some of the other female drivers that have come up through the Open Wheel Series.
Let's push the rewind button to last week's Roval race in Xfinity Racing, where Sam Mayer just ripped victory from Parker Fuggerman's hands, if you will. But I kind of want to say, well, you know, driving's driving. He did cross the checkered flag. You know, rewinding a little bit, and you know, this all goes back to that caution. And if you remember right, that caution came out. Well, even the broadcasters were saying, okay, Parker Fuggerman gets the win. I was all excited because I had a little $5 DraftKings money on Parker Fuggerman. But then, almost like they did a replay, and I'm like, oh, wait, the caution came out. This is now into overtime. We all know what happened from there. Sam Mayer. We don't want to use the word stole the win, but certainly it was a drama-filled victory in the Cure for 250 presented by the Blue Cross Blue Shield at North Carolina at the Charlotte Motor Speedway in the Roval. What are your thoughts about that? If you're Sam Mayer, hey, I won the race. The rules are what they are. But if you're Parker Fuggerman, says, you know, really, it kind of looked like you push the rewind button and say, oh, wait a minute, we made the wrong decision. I don't know if NASCAR really actually called Parker the winner, but the Parker's team was certainly celebrating like they had won. So walk us through that. We'll push the rewind button, and then we'll get into today's races and tomorrow's races. But what are your thoughts on Sam Mayer's win out in Charlotte last week?
Well, if you remember, if you go back to the beginning of the race last week, Sam Mayer lined up right beside SVG and beat SVG to the line, was penalized on the very first lap of the race for beating the leader to the line. So, I mean, he had already struggled right from the get-go of the day, so for him to even be able to come back and fight through that all day long to come out with the victory, you know, it's something to be said about just not giving up. Now, that being said, go back and you take a look at the caution. You know, my thing is that, you know, when the incident occurred, you know, the cars were coming off of turn four and going into that little short chicane that they set up there on the front stretch. So, you know, there was a considerable amount of difference between where Parker Klingerman was coming through, you know, all four through that chicane. And then, you know, even TV had to go back and take a look at this a couple different times. And they were finally able to slow this down. The flagman had the white flag in his hand. And just for clarification, so for people know, the flags are not for the people watching at home. They're not for the people in the stands. They signify no official start or end of a race. Mm-hmm. You know, this stuff is all done by timing and things like that now, and lights and cameras and things like this. So the flags are more for the drivers these days than they are for anything else. So regardless of the fact that the flagman had the white flag in his hand when Parker Klingerman crossed the line, the yellow light, the yellow caution light, and the time in which the tower hits the button is when they consider the caution coming on. And they were able to find almost the exact moment that this has happened. And, I mean, Klingerman is, like, within inches of the line when this occurred. So I guess my concern with all of that was is that there was a considerable amount of distance, and I know that NASCAR gives a lot of deference into, you know, these situations, hoping that the driver would be able to get out and be able to move on in these, you know, road course type situations. But that car was pinned underneath the tire barriers, and it had nowhere to go, and it was going to be a danger when the entire field came through on the very, well, what would have been the very last lap of the race. So I think there was plenty of time between turn four and that chicane that they could have called this much sooner, and then there wouldn't be this confusion over the fact about the white flag being in the flagman's hand and, you know, the lights coming on at almost inches away from the line. So, you know, in a lot of ways, you have to feel for Parker Kligerman that he had this. I mean, it was snatched out of – I mean, I would say that it was snatched right out of his hands. In the fact
exactly.
that he was right there, he you know, he thought he won. He thought he won. The teams thought he won. The TV even thought he won. You know, so you know, I you know, you figure, you know, you got a feel for him. You got a feel for the fact that he's in his final season, running in the Xfinity Series season or the Xfinity Series full time, and you know, he had that potential to win, and you know, it was just kind of snatched away.
You know what I want to use while we're talking about Xfinity? I want to use this opportunity to just step on a soapbox and say NASCAR, Xfinity, and CW mucked the waters all up. Because you know what? Here's the thing. I still haven't figured out how to watch. I would be even okay to I downloaded the CW live stuff, but now you have to pay for an extra package to get live sports premium. Well, it doesn't know. I can't do that in my area for whatever reason. So guess who's getting me to watch? So I've got to figure it out. Maybe I shouldn't tell this in NASCAR. I'll probably figure it out and shut me down. So if you go to the NASCAR app and you hit their camera angles and there's like the battle cam, it'll show the race. It'll show the same thing that the TV cameras are showing. It shows that exact same angle. And then you turn on MRN. You can then now listen, or PRN, whoever's got the radio broadcast, which in a lot of times are better than the TV broadcast anyway. You can now watch the race. Put it on your TV. You can, you know, push that button on your phone and it scans it, sends it to your TV. So now you're watching the race and you're listening to the race. That's how I can watch the Xfinity race. Now with the Cup Series, no problem at all. I just think that CW, they're getting paid. I don't blame them because NASCAR's paying them a buttload of money. But my God, at least put some of it on. I mean, you can figure this out because, like. If I have Hulu, there's a CW network here in Indianapolis, but I would have to go old fashioned and analog and put on the rabbit ears and all of that. I digress, Steve. I want you to use the powers that you have in NASCAR and tell them that they made a hell of a mess with the broadcast of Xfinity. All right, I'm off my soapbox. Go ahead, sir. it's just ridiculous. I mean, am I the only one that you've heard that about? Across the board, I think fans aren't happy that they can't readily watch. What was the reason for that? Maybe I just need some affirmation as to why this is happening in my life right now.
The thing is right now for the last couple, you know, for the last few races of this year, is that this is all being produced by NBC because NBC, you know, kind of, you know, moved the coverage, you know, as far as extending early instead of waiting until the 2025 season. So, you know, with them kind of being, you know, the production part of this, and then you got CW being the, you know, the carrier, you know, they're kind of in this transitional phase in which not everything is up and running the way that it wants. So you're not able to watch it on the CW app, you know, live as you normally would, and you can't watch it on Peacock because, you know, they're you know, differences in, you know, broadcast partners and all these different types of things. So hopefully as they go into 2025, a lot of this is going to be changed out, and you'll be able to watch all the races on the CW app or whatever you have, you know, over the air or cable package, you know, and it'll kind of be more continuity than you do right now.
Oh man, there's a saying for what they say. I heel jacked it up, but that's okay. I got the problem with this because if you go to the app and you click the app and you hit camera version. You hit, I think it's called Battle Cam, or anyway, you can tell it's the TV version. You scan it to your TV, and then you listen to MRN and PRN. And actually, you know, maybe because I'm a radio guy and I've had a chance to meet those guys out here in Indianapolis, I like the radio broadcast. If you had your choice to listen to the race, if you're not at the track, I mean, if you had your choice to listen to the race on PRM or MRN or watch it on NBC or whatever the option is that they have to watch it, would you rather do that? Would you prefer the radio broadcast over the TV broadcast? I guess that's the better question.
Well, you know, I don't normally listen. I don't normally listen to the races because I'm, you know, usually, I mean, I do have it on, but I'm never really listening, to be honest with you. You know, I've got so many other things going on that I'm following it through other ways. So
I got you. It makes sense. All right. Well, let's get into this race out in Vegas. Qualifying is until 3 o'clock. So which means your DraftKings betting screen will not pop up probably till after qualifying. And usually how they do it, it's just like, okay, now we qualify, we know who's on the pole. They'll say, okay, you can bet on the litters. And then 30, 45 minutes later, they'll let you bet on, you know, third place and fifth place. So that said, we got a later on in the day for those that see around the Eastern Coast. Here's what we've got. Here's what we're looking at. We know Justin Allgaier is in. Cole Custer is in. Austin Hill is in. Chandler Smith is in. On the bubble, Sam Mayer, Jesse Glove, A.J. Allmendinger, and Sammy Smith. For all intents and purposes, those are the only drivers that we're watching this year. We always like to see a winner or, you know, somebody who's not in the hunt. But if we're paying attention to the playoffs, which we are, there are your drivers. What are your thoughts about the bubble drivers, first of all, Steve, as we go into the Xfinity race today?
Well, you know, I kind of lost my train of thought. That's kind of my fault. You know, I think Sammy Smith a couple of weeks ago at Talladega, he was very lucky in the fact that he was able to win that race. And he's now at the very bottom of all of this. So it's going to take a little bit of work. They've struggled throughout the season to be able to be up there in contention for this in the first place. And, you know, that win out there at Talladega kind of solidified the fact that he was into this round. But he's going to have to pick that up. He's going to have to be able to get past the likes of the Justin Allgaiers and the Cole Custers of the world. You know, Sam Mayer's victory, you know, in Charlotte last week. Once again, another junior motorsports car that has struggled throughout the year and, you know, had, like we already talked about, had the issues last week. I think Jesse Love, A.J. Allmendinger, those two drivers, you know, Jesse has been dominant throughout the year. He's got like 5 poles throughout the entire year. So, you know, he's been fairly dominant when it comes to that. He's picked up a couple stage wins here and there, but once again, he's going to have to be able to pick up and be closer to his counterpart, Austin Hill, which is third in points right now. So, you know, those have been, you know, the people that we've really, you know, somebody like an Austin Hill, I mean, he's really been up there all year long, competing for these wins and stage points and things like that. So, at the end of the day, I think I think Sammy Smith, Jesse Love, A.J. Allmendinger, and I want to say that maybe Chandler Smith. I think Chandler Smith, even though that he's top four right now and can move on, I think he may be somebody that loses out, you know, over the next four races. Races.
I know we don't know who qualified yet, but do you have a winner for today?
We do know qualifying. Qualifying was last night. Brandon Jones and Cole Custer.
I thought qualifying was today. Okay, well, fantastic. Then that retract everything that I said about the DraftKings betting. So you're picking Cole Custer. Love it. All right, let's real quickly. We've only got you here for another minute or two. Let's move over to the Cup Series. Kyle Larson, I think, is all but won the championship. But who am I? Kyle Larson, I love him, though. He's a great story. I'm a good fan of him. I like him. And so go Kyle Larson. You've got Christopher Bell, Tyler Reddick, and William Byron right there. On the bubble, we got Ryan Blaney, Denny Hamlin, Chase Elliott, and Joey Logano. What say you on the playoff picture? And if you have a pick for tomorrow, what would it be?
Well, Joey Logano is just lucky to be in this race. Going back to Charlotte, once again, problems at Charlotte last week where Alex Bowman's car failed post-race inspection and he was disqualified from the race. That put him down last place, handing Joey Logano over, who was out of that, now has the possibility of coming in and winning a third championship. He's gonna definitely have to pick it up. Those struggles over the last couple of races that led to him being pushed out or potentially pushed out, he's really gonna have to pick that up. But yeah, you're right. I think Kyle Larson at this moment, he's a perennial favorite to win this thing. He's won six times already this year, and he won this race in Vegas last year. So there you go. That's where we're at.
Is that your drafting pick for tomorrow, Kyle Larson?
Yeah, I'm going to go with Kyle Larson.
I love it. Steve Wilson, Editor-in-Chief of Speedway Digest. Steve, where can people find your work and masterpieces, sir?
Follow us at Speedway Digest on X, facebook.com/Speedway Digest, and speedwaydigest.com. Thanks, man. Talk to you later.
All right, buddy. Steve Wilson, Editor-in-Chief of SpeedwayDigest.com, our official NASCAR contributor. My name is Tom Marquez, El Presidente. We'll be right back right here on the Balance Radio Network.
Give me fuel, give me fire, give me that which I desire. Ooh.
That's the sound of unaged whiskey transforming into Jack Daniel's Tennessee whiskey in Lynchburg, Tennessee. Around 1860, Nearest Green taught Jack Daniel how to filter whiskey through charcoal for a smoother taste, one drop at a time. This is one of many sounds in Tennessee with a story to tell. To hear them in person, plan your trip at tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
It's double trouble, double the fun at African Safari Wildlife Park in Port Clinton, Ohio. See the largest antelope on Earth, the giant eland, and the ugliest creature on Earth, the African warthog. There's so much to see and do, including the Midwest's only drive-through safari. Feed the animals, see live educational shows, feel the excitement. Have your picture taken with a python or cockatoo. Feel the adventure. Shop the Symbol Lodge gift shop with items available from around the globe. Visit the snack bar or picnic facilities. Enjoy a pony or camel ride. Or cheer your favorite porker on to victory in the famous Pork Chop Down. Bring your family to see the rare and exotic animals at African Safari Wildlife Park in Port Clinton, Ohio. Just take Route 2 to the Route 53 North exit and follow the sign. Only 17 miles west of Cedar Point via Route 6. Open every day, rain or shine.
Oh, hi.
Hey.
I've seen on the board, do you guys have Black Rifle coffee here?
No, I'm sorry. We only carry good small batch coffee here.
Well, it is great small batch coffee.
Well, that really can't be unless it's fresh roasted, so I don't,
Well, it is fresh roasted.
I don't think you know what that means. You know what this is? This is Masa Lekwa Pique, which, of course, in the Indonesian language... Oh, let me finish. In the Indonesian language, it's weasel coffee.
You just made that up.
No, it's been passed through their digestive tract.
That's disgusting.
And then it's nature's wet processing.
Yeah, but is it good?
I mean, it's all right. Are they investor philanthropists? Do they support good causes?
Yeah, tons of causes. Veterans causes and first responder causes. But it doesn't matter because they make good coffee. So that's what I'm wanting.
Do you have any?
You know what? Actually, I'm I'm just going to order it. They make it freshly roasted.
Okay. Right.
Black Rifle Coffee.
It's good.
Don't know much about history. Don't know much biology. Don't know much about a science book. Don't know much about the French I took. But I do know that I love you. And I know that if you love
me. Mandy. Mandy Pepperidge, well, I haven't seen you since we...
Go away.
I'm sorry. I can only stay a minute. Let me buy you some lunch. Oh, you've got your lunch. Well, how about some milk? You got your milk, too. Well, can I just massage your thighs while you eat?
Do I have to leave?
Welcome back to The Balance. My name is Tom Mark Wachell, Presidente. We're high atop The Balance Studios here in the west suburbs of Indianapolis. Thank you, Adam Jividant, super Browns fan, Guardians fan, and yes, he's still a Guardians fan after last night's game against the Yankees. And then the Cavs fan as well, and Browns fan, and Ohio State fan, you name it. But he's also our college football co-host. And helped us break down the games. And yes, we're talking about IU Nebraska homecoming at home. And as I said earlier, we don't have the national sports attention yet. We have it now. But joining us now, who always has the national sports attention, is Mr. Ed Crash, beat writer for the Philadelphia Eagles and SI.com. How is you, sir?
Hey, I'm doing good, Tom. Happy weekend.
I tell you what. Oh, it's going good. You know, we had a few days off, but it was good to get back to the grind of things per se. So, but we got to get out and get in the cabin and enjoy a little of the nature, if you will, earlier this week. So this weekend's good. And IU is at home against Nebraska. It's homecoming. Fox's national sportscast was there. Pat McAfee did his thing there. It's huge. So if you're an IU guy like I am, you know, this is pretty exciting. It's good time. So hang on to it.
Are you allowed to go to homecoming if your GPA was under 2.0? I'm just asking, just curious.
I think you can. I think as long as you got a diploma there, and I think, you know what, I've been to several homecomings in my years. We went last year. We're not going this year. Now I wish that we had. But we did go to a game already this year. But when they take your tickets and scan your tickets and it's homecoming, we're going to let you in. So you're good. You're good, buddy.
Okay. All right.
You trying to give us a peek into your GPA in college? I don't think. I don't even know if they look at that anymore.
I was curious about your GPA, really. That's why I was wondering if they let you in.
My GPA is in the negative, buddy.
Well, it's good they still let you in, man. Yeah,
all right. That's right. Absolutely. Yeah. Excited about that. Well, let's get on track here, the Eagles here. Real quickly here, let's address the elephant in the womb, if you will. Room. There we go. Nick Sirianni completely made an ass out of himself. I don't think there's any excuses for that. What I don't understand is why. What's the purpose of it? Chirping at the fans. They even won the dang game. So I'm going to turn it over to you. You're there. You saw it all unfold. Social media went crazy on Nick Sirianni this week, and it's all the talking heads have been talking about this week. He did finally apologize. I just don't know what caused him to get into that mood in the first place.
Yeah, it's just been kind of that. Sirianni's done that before. He's gotten on fans in different cities. I remember last year in Kansas City, he yelled at fans. I just don't understand it. It's very odd behavior, if you ask me. Clearly, you can't be. And I think these were Eagles fans that he was yelling at, and you can't do that. Mm-hmm. Obviously, because they're the ones that keep the lights on, right, at the facility, and they pay these players' salaries in part. So you know, you can't turn on your own fans. But listen, you know, the fans are turning on him too. You know, there were some fire Nick chants and, you know, chanting run the ball with Barkley in the backfield. And, you know, I can't blame him for getting upset, but you can't turn that anger back toward the fans. You need to be a little bit more mature than that and focus your attention on celebrating with your players, you know, or coaching your players. You know, we see him yell at the other team's players too, which, you know, I don't like that either. So, you know, I would suspect that owner Jeffrey Lurie brought him in this week and said, or probably right after the game, and said, yo, you got to tone this act down. And then what was even more bizarre was he brought his three kids into the press conference. Mm-hmm. And that there was a speculation mm-hmm. he's using them as a shield to prevent, you know, these hard questions that were going to be lobbed his way. But, you know, he said, you know, he told us that, listen, he loves his kids, but his wife wasn't happy. His wife told him, you know, hey, don't ever do that again, ever. And so we won't see that again. But, yeah, it's just some odd behavior. But it's not, like, something that he hasn't done before. Like, he's brought his kids up to press conferences before. You know, he's yelled at fans before. He's yelled at opposing players before. So, you know, I don't know why this took center stage, because we've seen it from him before. But, you know, it's just odd behavior, and he can't do it. And I don't know if he ever will not do it. And, you know, listen, if he doesn't win enough games, he won't be here at the end of the year.
There you go. That answer's pretty clear there. Well, let's talk about Saquon. You read an article about – wrote an article that not got a win at the – at the home stadium there. He got that, and now he's going back home against the Eagles. I mean, I'm so sorry, the Giants. And so he's kind of got this emotional return, if you will. There's always that return back to the former team we've seen in teams all together. What's been the atmosphere around him and him being going back to New York and playing in against the Giants, his former team, and in a lot of aspects, they're what gave him the big break, if you will. And I think everybody remembers his a few years ago, his one-handed catch. So I think it was on Monday Night Football or Sunday Night Football. Saquon Barkley returning home to the Giants. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, listen, he finished as the Giants' fourth all-time leading rusher in 6 years there, you know, and the guys ahead of him, Rodney Hampton, Joe Morris, and there's another one I'm missing, Tiki Barber. But they did it in more games. You know, if Saquon was able to play more games, he would probably be the Giants' leading rusher in their history. But as it is, he's fourth, so he meant a lot up there. And he's a good community guy. He's a good locker room leader. You know, Giants fans obviously weren't happy to see him leave, especially for a division rival like the Eagles. So there's been a lot of talk, is he going to get booed? He doesn't seem to think so. I think he will. But, you know, he's got a lot of friends still on the Giants. He went to Dexter Lawrence's wedding. Dexter Lawrence has 7 sacks this year. What a great year the defensive mm-hmm. tackle is having. You know, Aaron Donald type stuff. But they went to each other. You know, Saquon went to Dexter's wedding in June. And Lawrence said this week, hey, you know, we talked about it there. And say, hey, we're good friends. But, you know, it's going to be a war when we play twice this year. So here we are with the first war on, you know, on tap for Sunday. And it's been a huge storyline. Saquon's approach is, hey, I don't want to make it bigger than it is. But, you know, once, you know, Sunday arrives, he's going to want to do as well as he can, if not better than he's ever done before, because it is his former team. They made him the second overall pick back in 2018 out of Penn State. He's a phenomenal player, still playing at an elite level. So he's going to want to, you know, go out there. I'm sure the emotions will be a little extra. A little extra for him. We saw it with A.J. Brown when he played against the Titans. You know, he kind of said, I don't want to make it bigger than it is. But then on game day, he torched the Titans over 100 yards, a couple touchdown passes. This was last year or maybe 2 years ago at this point. But, you know, he is asked about it. He said, listen, during the week, it's just business as usual. You know, you're not really thinking too much about it. You're thinking about what you need to do. But come game day, that's when the emotion comes out. So I think we'll see an emotional Saquon Barkley on Sunday back in New York.
Let's talk about your backup left tackle, Fred Johnson, versus the Giants edge rusher, Brian Burns. Of course, you just talked about Dexter Lawrence. The Giants, the lead in the NFL sack, so it's not the best time to be without Jordan Mailata. The Eagles have 2 options to replace him. They can move Becton to left tackle or Steen to fill in at right guard there. They can simply replace Mileta. I'm sorry I'm saying that with Fred Johnson, which I think the likely will be the latter there. But when Fred Johnson started at right tackle for the Eagles in week four, he allowed the highest single game pressure at 29.7% of any offensive lineman this season. So you got to have some worries about putting Fred Johnson in there at the left of the tackle position there.
Well, absolutely. But listen, that said, Fred Johnson also was one of the highest graded running blockers, from when he filled in for Lane Johnson earlier this year. So he's very good at run blocking, which you're going to need because I think you're going to try to get Saquon up and running early. But he has a hard time pass blocking. And now you throw in Brian Burns, who, he was questionable on the injury report this week, but he's going to play. And I think this is kind of a short-term fix. I think they're going to probably move Becton out there, but I think they want to leave Becton kind of in the middle of the line there to kind of match up a little bit with Dexter Lawrence, who's 6'4", 340, and Becton 6'7", 365. So I think, the Eagles are probably going to keep Fred Johnson out there. But I would suspect maybe next week when they go against the Bengals and their great pass rusher, Trey Hendrickson, I think I think Becton will probably be out at tackle in that game, and they'll put Tyler Steen in, who they're very high on, third-round pick out of Alabama last year. They'll put him at guard for that game and probably for the foreseeable future. I mean, Mulata, I'm not sure he's even going to come back after missing these four games being on IR. That was a pretty nasty injury he suffered. He was on crutches after the game, saw him in the locker room. He wasn't, real happy. Barely put any weight on that left leg. I mean, this isn't something that you come back from after a week or two or three, or maybe not even four. So, they could be looking at a really long-term absence of Jordan Mulata. And that's a shame because he's one of the best left tackles in football. But I think they'll probably end up sliding Becton out there after this week.
Well, what do the Eagles have to do? What do they have to focus on in beating the Giants at home? As we know, the Giants are a very good team this year. And certainly all eyes are on both of these teams as far as postseason play. And the Giants are making more and more of a case that they deserve to be in the postseason here in a few months. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, well, they're 2-4. So they haven't had a winning season, I think, in 6 out of the last 7 years. And they're trending toward making it 7 out of 8, unless they get this thing turned around. There's still plenty of season left, and if they want to get it turned around, what better place than to do it is, at home against a division rival. So, they want to get to 3-4. They want to kind of stay alive. If the Eagles win, the Eagles are 3-2. They go to 4-2, and then if the Eagles win, they go to 3-2. They go to 4-2, and they're up, 2 games over the Giants. So, the Giants need this win for sure. And the Eagles, who knows what we're going to see. You just don't know week to week. I mean, this defense, they're going to be playing against Malik Nabers, a phenomenal rookie. The Eagles have a very good rookie that's playing, kind of defensive rookie of the year type stuff so far, Quinyon Mitchell. It'd be nice to see those two match up one-on-one, Nabers and Mitchell, two top rookies. We might see some of that, but, the Eagles' defense has been very inconsistent. They played great in New Orleans, held the Saints to 12 points. They played horribly in Tampa. They gave up 33, and then they played great against the Browns. They didn't give up a touchdown against Cleveland. The only touchdown they scored was on a scoop and score off a blocked field goal. Rodney McLeod, the old Eagles safety who won a Super Bowl here in Philly, of course, comes in and has a great game, 8 tackles, 50-yard scoop and score touchdown, but the Eagles defense played well. So, they've been wildly inconsistent. So I don't know what team's going to show up on Sunday against the Giants, but it's a big game for both. They're both trying to, keep pace with the Washington Commanders in the division and make a playoff run. I'll say this for the Eagles, though. They haven't played a whole lot of home games. They've only played at home twice, and now they're going to play 2 more road games. So they're going to play 5 of their first 7 on the road. And then I think the second half of the schedule, obviously, the home games start to come. So the Eagles have to kind of, find a way to win here on the road. So when they get to the second half of the season, they have these home games that they should stack up some wins. So going into New York, it's not an easy job for them. Jalen Hurts is 1-3 in MetLife Stadium with 7 interceptions in his career. One of those losses was against the Jets, who share the stadium with the Giants. He threw 3 picks against the Jets that day. But he's also thrown 4 picks in 3 games against the Giants. So it's a tough place for him to play. And unless he figures out how to play there, they're probably going to lose again.
You know, last week we talked a little bit about the trade rumors that coming up against the deadline, the trade deadline in, I think it's November 5th. We talked a little bit about the Eagles maybe doing something, but now it kind of appears that there's not a fire sale going on there at all, not that there ever was. So any anticipation in the trades with the Eagles or any other team for that matter? I think if there's any fire sales going on at all right now, and we briefly talked about this earlier with Adam, and that's the Browns. They've got to do something. They're a dumpster fire. They're like Purdue right now, but that's neither here nor there. Anything you're picking up on in the trade deadlines, whether it be with the Eagles or whoever?
Well, I mean, the Eagles need help pass rushing. You know, they had 5 sacks last week against the Browns, but they only had 6 coming in. In the first 4 games. So, you know, they need help rushing the passer. So you look at the Browns, you know, maybe Za'Darius Smith is someone they can get, but I'm not sure, you know, he hasn't had that great a year either. He was pretty quiet against the Eagles here last week. I didn't even notice him really on the field. Myles Garrett, of course, I doubt the Browns would trade him, and if they do, you know, it's going to cost the Kings ransom to get him. I think the Eagles trade happened at the end of summer when they acquired Jahan Dotson, the receiver from the Washington Commanders. That might have been their deal, because I don't think they're going to find an edge rusher out there at the trade deadline. They might. I mean, Dietrich Wise from the New England Patriots, I'm sure they're going to have a fire sale. But, you know, their players, how good are those players? I mean, they're 1-4 or 5 for a reason. They just don't have good players. So I don't know what, you know, they would have to offer, So I'm not sure they're going to make a move. And you're right, November 5th is the deadline. I'm not sure that there's a deal out there that makes sense, unless they want to try to trade like a veteran like Darius Slay, the cornerback, who is 32 mm-hmm. years old. You have some depth at corner. You have a couple of young kids and a former Colt, Isaiah Rogers, waiting in the wings. You have Keely Ringo, a draft pick from the University of Georgia a couple of years ago. I mean, these are guys you could try to put in there. If you were to trade Slay, but you would just be doing it to open a spot for them and maybe get a draft pick back in some form. But I'm not sure there's an answer out there for them on the trade market as to what they need, which is an edge rusher.
Well, let's go around the league on these games here. Typically we have Tony Donahue, the Tony T podcast, to help us with the betting part of it. But he couldn't join us today. So what we're going to do is we're just going to go around the league on the games, and I'm going to tell you the matchup, maybe a quick stat. I'll give you the spread, and if you've got an opinion on who wins against the spread, fine, we'll take it. If not, we'll just get your thoughts on the game. We'll start with the Patriots at the Jaguars at 1-5. The Patriots enter this matchup on a 5-game losing streak, which tied for the longest by New England over the past 30 seasons. We look at the Patriots quarterback, Drake May. They finally figured that out. I think he threw for 243 yards his first career start in week 6. And then, of course, with the Jaguars, where the Jaguars changed their approach on defense against another rookie quarterback in May, Jacksonville opted to sit back and really minimally blitz Chicago's Caleb Williams last week. And the spread is 5.5. What say you, sir?
Yeah, I would take the Jags on the points in this one. I'm just not really sold on what New England's doing. Drake May, second start, hopefully he's a little better. He was a little loose with the ball last week. I think he threw a couple picks. I like Jags. Second straight week they're playing in London. That's an advantage. You know, the Patriots are flying in this week. The Jags have been sitting there waiting. So I would take the 5.5 with the Jags to win this game.
Let's talk about the Seahawks. Seahawks are 3-3, and the Falcons are 4-2. The Seahawks have scored 20-plus points in all 6 games this season. The Ravens and Commanders are the only other team to do the same. Coach Mike McDonald is not really a big blitzer, preferring instead to send only 4 rushers most of the time. And the Falcons, you know, running back Bijan Robinson and Tyler Allgeier,
have had breakout weeks in game six, combining for 200 yards and three touchdowns on the ground. And the spread is 3 on this one.
Yeah, I like the Falcons to win. The Seahawks, you know, what they got off to, I think, a 3-0 start. They've lost 3 in a row. Now they're coming across country to play a Falcons team, I think, is pretty good and starting to find their groove. So I would take the home team here, giving up 3 points to the Seahawks.
The Titans 1-4, and at the Bills are 4-2. The Titans led the NFL in total defense, 248.8 yards per game, which is their third fewest yards allowed per game in the first 5 games since 1976. The Titans' passing game has gotten off to a terrible start, including a 95-yard passing performance by Will Levis last week. We know who they played last week. The Bills made a big move this week to improve the wide receiver group by adding Amari Cooper, which we talked about how he's a big addition to the Bills as well. So what are your thoughts on this? The spread is 9.5, and the Bills are at home against the Titans.
It seems like the Bills play at home every week, doesn't it? It seems like they're always at home.
It feels that way. It definitely feels that way.
Yeah, listen, that's a big number in the NFL. I don't think the Bills will cover. I think they'll win, but I don't think they'll cover. Amari Cooper, we'll see what he has left. I mean, people have told me, hey, don't pay attention to what his numbers were in Cleveland because Deshaun Watson stinks. Deshaun Watson doesn't like playing football. Deshaun Watson only cares about himself and his money. So don't pay attention to Amari Cooper's numbers. I'm not so sure. We'll see how he fits. Clearly, the Bills had to do something. That receiver room is awful. But, you know, it's not like you can step in right away after 3 or 4 days to prepare and become a world beater, I wouldn't think. Maybe Josh Allen lifts up Cooper's level in his first game with them. But I think it's a big number. I would take the Bills to win, but not to cover that 9.5.
Well, we want to make sure we don't let you go without talking about my Indianapolis Colts. Anthony Richardson is back, guys, for now. Miami's 12-point per game, 60 total per points, are the worst in the NFL and has scored fewer than 75 points in 6 straight games, only 3 times in franchise history. Obviously, as we know, Anthony Richardson is back. The Colts have managed to hold off just one opponent for fewer than 100 yards this season and having otherwise been disappointing against the run. And I could go on all day about how disappointing the Colts have been, but they are at 3-3, and the Dolphins are at 2-3, and the Colts are at home. But in quarterback Kyler Huntley's third start of the season, keep an eye on him to end Johannes Smith, who Huntley targeted 8 times in Miami's win over the Patriots in week 5. So the Dolphins are coming off of a bye week, and the spread is 3, again, at home against Mike Holtz.
Yeah, I mean, Jonathan Taylor, I think, is going to miss another game with an ankle injury. And I get why you're playing Richardson. He's got to play to learn and grow. But, you know, Flacco, he does some good things when he's in there. But he's 39. I mean, he's not the future. If you're playing for the future, you got to get Anthony Richardson in there. But, you know, Richardson's not off to a really good start here, right? He's thrown, I think, 6 interceptions in the 3 games he's played. I mean, you got to take better care of the football if you're going to beat the Dolphins. Listen, I don't like this matchup for the Colts. I think Tyler Huntley might be getting a little more comfortable at quarterback now. Would you say this is his third start in place of Tua Tagovailoa, who probably will be back? But they've got a lot of weapons, man. Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle. You know, I think Devon Achane might be back. Their running back could return. So I think it's a tough matchup. I think you have a desperate kind of Dolphins team coming in, a game below 500. I know the Colts have done a great job playing to 3-3 with, you know, having to manage their quarterback situation, but I don't know. I think the Dolphins are going to win this game, and if they don't, I think they'll play it to within, you know, the 3-point line. But I just think, I don't know, man. Richardson, he still has some things to learn, obviously. But hopefully he has a good game. But, you know, Flacco, I think, gives them the better chance to win in the short term. But if you're thinking long term, then you have to play Richardson. But, you know, I just don't like this matchup for the Colts here, and I think the Dolphins might find a way to win.
One final game here that I wanted to get your thoughts on is the Lions at the Vikings. And let's push the rewind a little bit. The Lions almost immediately ruled out Hutchinson from the team, what we referred to as, in the polite ways, a lower leg injury. And we both know what happened with there. And that was very, very scary for him. And I've heard from some other people and heard some other that works. And I think even you told me that you saw the tape and it was pretty gruesome that his leg went in a direction that the leg that God did not mean for the leg to go to. This looks like, though, he will be able to be back next year. Obviously not going to be back this year at all. Huge, huge punch in the gut to the Detroit Lions who have had a great start. So, you know, we'll see what happens there if that's an X factor for this game. But, you know, I wish him the best, and you hate to see that happen, no matter whose team it is. And, you know, you get a good sense of, hey, everybody is a good sport. You know, both teams were on knees and praying and that sort of stuff. And, you know, when you see that happen, it's a bad thing. And when you see the players begin to stand around so the cameras can't get what they're seeing, you know that this is a bad injury. First of all, thoughts on Hutchinson and the injury, and then we'll get into that game and we'll wrap it up for the Bulldogs, sir.
Yeah, it's such an unfortunate situation. He was having a great year, 7.5 sacks, unblockable. You know, I don't know where they turn from there. And, you know, they've had a week to kind of come to grips with it. But that kind of injury leaves a mark in the locker room. You know, players hate to see it. They hate to see a great player, and I've never met him, but I'm assuming he's a great guy too. You hate to lose somebody like that. And, you know, players, it's hard for them to just shake that off. I mean, I know they're professional athletes, and that's what they get paid to do, but, you know, still, that's a tough one to kind of come back from. If you're in that locker room and you say, oh, man, we're going to really miss this guy. He's a great guy. You hate to see it happen, so... you know, it's a shame. And hopefully, and I'm sure he will come back next year. I mean, a broken fibula, that's just ugly. You know, you hope it doesn't get infected like it did with Alex Smith, that quarterback that had that horrible leg injury, which was similar to what Hutchinson went through. And then Alex has got infected and, you know, really made his return hard. You hope that doesn't happen with Hutchinson because great player. And it's just a sad thing to see. So as far as the game goes, I mean, not having him, Sam Darnold, if he's comfortable in a pocket, he's a good quarterback. If you make him uncomfortable, you make him move around a little bit, try to get him outside the pocket, he becomes a different quarterback. He's not as good. So not having Hutchinson being able to pressure Darnold, I think, is going to hurt. And, you know, I think the Vikings, listen, they're going to lose sometime. They're 5-0. Chiefs are also 5-0 with a pretty good test, but I think the Vikings are going to lose sometime. They're not going to be the 72 Dolphins, but I'm not sure it's this week. I just think losing Hutchinson is really a kind of a big blow, physically, mentally, all that stuff. And I think Darnold, if you can't pressure him, can beat this Lions secondary. So I like the Vikings in this game.
Yeah, and 8 career passes against the Lions wide receiver Justin Jefferson has totaled 1,073 yards. That's the most by any player in his first 8 games versus an opponent in NFL history. And we talked about the Lions and the stories to watch around the Lions. Their offense will enter Minnesota on a roll under the leadership of Jared Goff. Man, Jared Goff has just really turned out to be a great fantasy quarterback. Thank you, Jared. I love that. Who's had 5 touchdown passes and 0 interceptions in the past 2 games. If he was a baseball player, he'd be like pitching a perfect game in 2 games in a row. What are the odds of that? Of course, with the Vikings, it's hard to imagine the Vikings winning. They're not able to slow down the Lions' run game. Minnesota's defense has allowed NFL second fewest rushing yards per game, 67.2, and the fewest touchdowns, 0.2 per game, all Detroit ranks 4th. So like you said, this isn't going to be the week that the Vikings lose. But the spread is 1.5. Do you think that Minnesota wins on the spread part of it?
Minnesota's getting the 1.5, I assume. Yeah, I do. I think they won on the spread part of it. I think, you know, it will be a close game. Maybe it comes down to a field goal. But, you know, I think the 1.5 line is – I think you always pick the team that is getting those 1.5 because that's an easy number to cover. I'm taking the Vikings with the points, too. They're giving up the points, I should say.
Let's talk about what's going to happen possibly this week. Are we going to know who's going to go to the World Series? I watched that game last night. The Guardians got a disappointing loss against the Yankees. They're still in it, but the Yankees do lead 3-1. And then you have the Dodgers, and the Mets got a great win over the Dodgers on Thursday night. The Dodgers won that game. So sorry. So we'll see what happens there. It's beginning to look like this could be a Dodgers-Yankees matchup, which, is the MLB's wet dream, as Adam said earlier. But you got to look at they bought their way into the situation. Quick question, though. Have you watched any of the postseason, and have you seen – so there's a couple ways you can watch it, but have you watched it under the DataCast version?
No, I watched it on regular television, man. I watched that Yankees Guardians.
Well, they got a thing, man. They got a thing called DataCast. You got to watch it. It's actually pretty cool. I'm a data nerd. I work in data in the real world, and that part of it is me. So I like data, but I like how they've got it. So what they've got is it's an AI generated type thing, and they'll have and Melissa's like, this is just way too busy. There is a lot going on. So you don't have to watch that version of it. But in the, like, lower right-hand corner, it'll show, the Guardians now have a 6% chance of beating the Yankees in this game or whatever it is. And then they'll say, okay, their pitcher, he pitched a curveball last time, a high-low. It'll give an anticipation of what the next pitch is. It'll show, he's 90% of the time he's hitting it to the left or he's hitting it to the center field. It's really probably a lot of stuff that these teams are already using, especially when it comes to pregame scouting reports. But it's all right there, and it's AI generated, and it's cool to watch the data change as the game changes. So really, it takes the time to do that. Pretty cool. But what are your thoughts overall on what we're looking at in the postseason with the MLB, sir?
Well, yeah, it's hard to figure that. Both teams need one more win to get there. It's hard to say they won't get that one more win. I think we're headed for a Dodgers-Yankees World Series, which, is the dream series. You got the New York market, the East Coast market, and then you have the L.A. market and the West Coast market. So, I think it'll be a very highly rated World Series to watch. And, I just think that game the other night that the Guardians won after the Yankees came back and took the lead, they – tie it on that Noel homer, and I didn't know his nickname was Big Christmas, but what a great nickname for that John Curtis Noel to hit that two-run tying shot in the ninth to tie the game, and then David Fry wins it in the tenth with a two-run blast. I mean, that was just such drama, and that's the kind of, I don't really have a dog in the fight here, so to speak. I don't really mind who wins at this point, but I just like to go for the I watch for the drama, and that was one of the most dramatic playoff baseball games I can remember watching. Just so exciting, and I just wish I could have been in the stadium to hear how loud it was there at Progressive Field in Cleveland, because I'm sure that place was off the off the charts loud. So, but it was a fun game. I didn't see any of last night. I'm sure that's had some drama in it too. The Yankees kind of came back with a couple in the ninth, so. That's what you want. I mean, the other series, the Dodgers and Mets, they've been blowout games. So, they're a little harder to watch. Both teams have won by blowout. So, but I think the Dodgers-Yankees is what we're looking at this point. They only need a win each, and I don't see any reason why they wouldn't get that.
So it's going to be crazy if this happens. The Dodgers and the Yankees, they were talking about it on TV. What will happen is because of the TV rights and all the broadcast stuff that has to happen – and all of that really is based on East Coast time. They're going to have like 3-4 o'clock games out in LA. And that is going to create like a traffic nightmare. It's already a traffic nightmare. And then they're going to have the later games in New York, which is in itself a cluster all by itself. So they said that the traffic meltdown on the impact on the grid, if you will, in both cities during these World Series is going to be like record breaking. So,
You got to take public transportation if you're going to New York. I mean, I've taken the train to the Bronx, to watch the Yankees game. My son's college graduation was held in Yankee Stadium from NYU. Always take the train. Always take the train.
Always take the train.
Always train into New York and get around the subway. And That's how I always got to the Bronx. I never drove. Just take the train. It's easier. And the trains are crowded, too. Don't get me wrong. It's not like there's no traffic waiting in line to get on the train or finding a seat once you get on the train, but it's better than driving. L.A., well, I don't know. I don't know what the public transportation situation is like there, but, yeah, it's going to be a lot of cars moving in the same direction to one place.
Well, here in Indianapolis, we're a big city, but we don't have the trains. I can take a train. Take that back. I can take a train, an Amtrak train from Indianapolis to Chicago, but it's like a bunch of stops, so it still takes you like an hour and a half to get there by train, and you can be there 2 hours by car. So our transportation from home to games is Uber.
We really don't have
that option. Ed Kratz, beat writer for the Philadelphia Eagles and SI.com. As usual, it's a pleasure joining us. I know you're going to be off for a couple weeks. Have a great time in Japan. That sounds like an awesome trip. Congratulations to you and your family on that marriage ceremony that's going on there as well. But where can people find your work and masterpieces? Or are you going to take the entire 11 days off? Right? When does your trip start?
Thank you for the well wishes. Friday, this coming Friday, okay. We leave in the morning, and we return November 4th, which is a Monday. So we're there from the October 25th and November 4th. And listen, it's a 13-hour time difference. They're ahead of us by 13 hours, so I don't know what that's going to look like or, how much football I'll be watching, because it's probably going to be, in the early morning hours of one of those days. So I'll still be in touch with some guys that, help work for me on the website. They'll be sending me some quotes, but I don't know how much I'm going to write. I mean, we have tours lined up to see whatever's over there to see, and I'm going to be
busy.
What part
are you going to?
We're going to Tokyo, and then the wedding ceremony is about a three-hour drive outside of Tokyo into a tiny little village where his wife's grandparents live and a lot of the friends and family. So it's a small ceremony, 20 to 30 people will be there, but it'll be very Japanese custom. We're going to see a lot of the Japan, scenic or whatever, countryside, I guess. On that drive, and then we're coming back to Tokyo. We're going to Mount Fuji. We're seeing other sites. We're going to go to Tokyo Disneyland. They've got some stuff lined up. My wife has some stuff. Listen, I'm just a guy. Tell me what time we leave, and I'll be on whatever the bus is or whatever we need to do.
You're the guy that's just going to be there, be the dad, and the provider of the credit card. You're that guy.
Trip's costing a fortune, man, I tell you.
Yeah.
But it'll be fun.
All right, sir. You have a safe trip. You'll enjoy it. I personally have been to Japan in the Army, so you'll enjoy it. We look forward to hearing about it when you get back, sir.
All right. Thanks, Tom. I appreciate it.
All right. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Ed Kratz, beat writer for the Philadelphia Eagles and SI.com. Appreciate him joining us. Thank you, Adam Jividen, Super Browns fan, Buckeye fan, and, yes, still a Guardians fan. Cavaliers fan and our college football co-host, breaking down the games against the spread as well. And thank you, Steve Wilson, editor-in-chief of Speedway Digest. I'm glad you're feeling better and are able to join us today and help us break down all the stuff that's going on in NASCAR. It looks like kind of a crazy story going on with the lawsuit and everything, but enjoy having him on, and we're going to see what happens on with the playoffs. My name's Tom Marquis. El Presidente, remember to make sure you're following us on the book on the X, formerly known as Twitter, the Book of Faces. And make sure if you're listening to this on the podcast, like I mentioned earlier, hit that like button, that thumbs up button, subscribe button, whatever it is, so we know how awesome you are. We already know how awesome we are. My name is Tom Marquis. Don't drink and drive. It ain't cool. I'm out of here.